Hello everyone, this is Shane Perry. I'm filling in for Michael Henry tonight. And this is the Module 7, Crisis Communication and Managing Issues. Hopefully everybody can hear me fine and we have the chat windows that you guys can also chime in. Good. Thank you, Anne. So once again, this is a participation. Name a communication crisis you read about, heard about, or were involved in by any chance, if you could. Let's type it into the chat window. Let's make sure that everybody is able to be able to be heard. Oh, me too. Good one, Ann. That's Facebook. Very timely. Thanks, Christina. HIPAA, United Airlines, data breach. That's pretty broad. Schools. There's quite a few, I think, that we have to work with right now. NCAA. And Baylor. Wow, there's quite a bit that's going on right now. So it definitely puts kind of the timeliness into what we're going to be going over. Something to note, too, is that crisis and managing issues is 13% for your KSAs. So part of this is being able to go through the crisis communications process, being able to identify the type of crisis, the response process, as well as managing issues to prevent a crisis and environmental scanning. So tonight, I have with me Shannon Tipton. She's an APR. Shannon, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hello to everybody. I would like to share with you that I took this course in the summer of 2012. A little background behind where I came from. I went to University of Maryland, started working on the East Coast for the Department of Defense in public affairs and corporate communications, that kind of work. Ended up in Texas, not a lot of government defense work in Dallas, so I switched over to the legal community, and I've been working for law firms since 2005. In the 2012 time range, I probably had about 18 years of PR experience and thought I needed to up my game a little bit. And so I started by signing up for this course. I took it through the summer, and I also printed out a copy of the study guideline and pretty much just carried it around with me all the time on my commutes, whenever I had a little free time at lunch, and I would just slowly read through it. And in addition to taking this course, I also did some case studies and just, you know, tried very, very hard to keep this on top of mind, but not do it all at once and gulp it all down at once. Took my readiness review in December of 2012. I used a real life, real work situation as like kind of my case study to present to the readiness review board. And then I was passed and was able to take the exam early March of 2013, and I passed it, and I've been an APR since then.
That is fantastic. All right. Now, you know, all your experience, have you also had some exposure to you know, reputation management, crisis communication, and so on?
I worked working for a law firm. I've had a couple of incidents. One in particular, we had to fire a partner, and I had to prepare our leadership for the partner maybe going to the media and saying some bad things about our firm. At the time, he didn't do it, but that involved some speaking points and being prepared for some negative publicity. Another case we had, our managing shareholder he was involved in a scandal that Dallas Morning News and D Magazine, which is our big magazine, kind of gossip monger magazine here in Dallas, covered. So his name and the title sex scandal were in a headline. So that was
oh, jeez.
But as far as like natural disasters or things where, you know, some of this covers certainly that extent, I have not had as much experience. Mine has mostly been like reputational kinds of things, prepping our attorneys with, you know, valid talking points and plans of action in case bad media or bad publicity hits us.
Right. And I guess for myself, too, I've had my exposure to working on controversies or scandals like you're talking about. But living up in the northern Maine, I've also had my exposure to environmental crisis as well, working for a hospital and dealing with ice storms, snowstorms, and data outages. So
definitely good experience.
Yes. The environmental ones we tend to be a lot more prepared for, but they don't happen as often as the controversial crisis.
Yeah.
So we're going to go over some of the scenario practice questions. Again, please focus on your reading. A lot of this is to help you understand the questions, and this will give you a really great strategy by examining how the questions are designed. So we have two questions. These are from Allison Matthews and Sora Nastasha. And I believe we have, who do we have reading for us tonight? Do we have Allison and Soren on?
Yes, this is Allison.
Oh, there you are, Allison. Excellent. So Allison's going to read some of these, and is Soren on the line as well? I don't see her. Okay, so Allison, you're probably going to be reading most of these then. So the scenario practice questions, none of these are on the exam, but they really help us with the course itself. So as a study practice, just learning how questions are designed will help you a lot in the end. So listen to the scenario. Consider the KSA. We already know what the KSA is going to be, but respond on best practice, and then we're going to discuss the content and the format of the question afterwards. Again, each one of these is only on one question. It's on the process, not just on the facts. So, Allison, take it away.
Okay. You have recently joined a growing community college as their director of marketing and public relations. You have a small but talented staff and a good rapport with executive level administrators. The college has done well with their marketing strategy to recruit traditional and non-traditional students, and it enjoys a strong reputation with its constituency area. However, a crisis communication plan does not exist. What is your next step toward solving this deficiency? Choose three. A is immediately plan a meeting with senior level administrators to discuss the importance of readiness and developing a crisis communication plan. Engage their support for approaching the college president to encourage his participation in the planning process. B, begin brainstorming to identify potential threats to the college that could trigger a crisis. C, add development of a crisis communication plan to your list of goals, but continue to work on the directives your supervising vice president has given you as higher priorities. D, think about the most likely crisis scenarios and draft questions, answers, and resolutions.
Okay, and if everybody can put in your three answers into the chat window. This is a pretty good sign. It looks like we're getting quite the range of answers. All right. So there we have it. The answer is A, B, and D. Austin, if you want to read the rationale.
Yes. At a community college, it's not if a crisis will happen, but when. Trigger events could range from extreme weather, such as a tornado or hurricane, to workplace violence or a host of other scenarios. And effective public relations, I have the 10th edition, but it says, whereas public relations practitioners cannot typically predict a specific disaster or crisis, they can anticipate that the unexpected will occur. And I'm going to paste into the chat, I think, a little bit more. Rationale. It's why specifically, gosh, that's a long, sorry for the length. I guess I got too long. But basically, answer A addresses that good crisis planning requires top-down support. So you really can't, you can't expect to be as successful if you don't have that upper-level support, support and involvement. And then answers B and D both address how public relations practitioners must determine the types of crisis for which this is being planned. But the reason C was not the best answer was because it kind of indicates a lax or non-urgent attitude. And basically the stakes, the risk and consequences for not being prepared are just too high. So it has to kind of rise to that highest level priority.
Okay, fantastic. Shannon, any insights you want to add on this?
It's very typical to what a question will be like in the exam, because as you saw from how all of you answered it, C is kind of a no-brainer. I mean, you kind of automatically think, well, of course you do C. Of course you'd add it to your goals. But you have to pay attention to the question. You have to pay attention to kind of what the KSA is or what they're talking about. And in any situation where you're working at a public organization and you don't have a crisis plan in place, that, you know, the first priority is you have got to get your leaders, because imagine if you're working at that place and an emergency happens and you're the PR person, you haven't told your leaders how important it is to have a crisis plan, you're going to get fired. So if you reread it, or if you look at kind of the situation where you've started the job, there's no crisis communication plan, it's very easy to understand why A, B, D are the right answers.
All right. Allison, would you like to take this one as well?
Sure, I can read it. The Department of Health announced a measles outbreak. Out of 15 people reported to have measles, 13 attended the same networking event at golf course XYZ. You are the PR officer for the golf course, which is going to host a large tournament in the morning. Upon hearing the news, the board of directors ask you to gather more information and wait until after the tournament before going public. You review and activate the golf course's crisis plan. What do you do next? Select two. A, assemble your crisis team, including management and outside counsel, and designate someone to be the go-between with the board of directors. B, tweet that the tournament is canceled due to the circumstances beyond our control and defer all phone calls to counsel. C, issue a press release confirming the measles incident and what steps the golf course is taking, then post it on the golf course's website. D, issue a statement to employees and to people who attended the networking event and promise further updates.
Okay. Seeing a lot of A and D on this one. There we have it, A and D. Would you like to read the rationale?
A, activate the crisis plan immediately. Assemble the crisis team to implement emergency protocols. Assign specific roles to team members. D, identify the priority publics. Inform employees and your internal audience first. B, instead of building trust with candor and apology, you would be putting the blame on someone else. effectively saying we're victims too. And C, you want to issue a timely statement, but you need to inform employees before the media and the general public. So,
right.
A and D.
Okay. Shannon.
All right. So if you get a question like this when you're taking the exam, that question you could very easily have eliminated B, because you know just from studying this course and from reading all your everything that you've read, you're not going to tweet anything. You're just that's crazy. So then you would be down to A, C, and D. And C is basically this is, you know, you don't send a press release out till you've informed your internal staff, your employees, and all that. So that's why this is a good question, and it's a good example of how you can eliminate some of the questions that or the answers that are obviously not correct to help you come up with the right two.
Excellent. And actually, we have Joan here. As Joan, are you going to be reading these, or is it all Allison? For the sake of time, all Allison. All right, take it away, Allison.
Okay. Your company experienced an explosion during business hours in which two people were seriously hurt. 1.5 hours into the crisis, and the situation is contained. Your company is located in a busy industrial park, and leadership is concerned that someone will post photos on social media, cause panic, and alert the news media. What three actions would you advise leaders to do first? Choose three. A, contact neighboring businesses and assure them that the situation is contained. B, conduct a situational analysis, gathering information and verifying facts to prepare media statements. C, identify what caused the explosion and verify that it truly is contained. D, contact the affected employees' families. E, hold a conference with employees, reassuring them that the source of the problem has been contained.
Okay. If everybody can place their three answers. Looks like we got a pretty good range going right now for these. And the answers we have are C, D, and E.
The rationale is, according to the handout, within the first 2 hours of a crisis, you must identify and deal with the underlying problem. Stop the production of victims, which is what C aims to do. Then, I'm not sure how to say his name, Lukasz Zuski says to manage the victim dimension, which D and E do. E also follows the handout's third step, employee communications. A would be the fourth step, contacting those indirectly affected, followed by B, address the media last. Deal with the self-appointed, self-anointed, and the media. Also from KSA 3.2, crisis management looks beyond the current organizational mindset.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you. Shannon, any insight on this one?
It's another good example of a question that you're going to get asked. And as you saw from the responses, it does kind of confuse you because you have five good answers. And they're all things you would do, but you have to think about it in the sequence. You have to think about what the question was, and the question is, what are you going to tell your leaders to do first? What actions do you do to advise your leaders? And first and foremost, you have to make sure that the explosion or the damage is contained before you tell anybody anything. And then forward from that, if there's victims, their family has to be informed before anybody else, next employees, and then you can do these other things. But
right.
A very good question and a demonstration of, again, how it can be tricky in the exam.
Right. This question actually definitely resonated as something similar to what I remember from the exam, where all the answers were potentially correct. It was just that knowing what the sequence of events. And so Angel is asking, why not B? And the rationale we had for B was addressing the media last.
I mean, B is a good answer. It's just not the answer that you'd have them do first. It's something you're going to do, definitely. But if you're doing that first and you haven't determined that the explosion's contained and you haven't contacted the victim's families, then that's going to kind of bite you.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to be going into our module notes. These were provided by Maria Gordon Scheidlow, and she is going to give us a lot more of the insight of what she was able to find about crisis communication.
Thank you, Shane. And can you do the driving for me?
I can do the driving. Just say next slide.
Great. First of all, I want to commend all of you who've done notes in the past, or will do the notes. There was so much great information, as you all might know, from all the reading material that it was just hard to cull it down to 5 or 10 minutes. But what you'll see, next slide. What you'll see in the slides as you go forward is there'll be timepieces, because as we all know, in a crisis, just time is of the essence. And planning and preparedness can give you more time to think, because when you get into the heart of the crisis, that opportunity for time and clear-headedness to recheck or check and recheck your work kind of disappears. So for Module 7 review, next slide. We're just going to talk about some of the key points that were made under reputation, issues, risk management versus crisis communications, and then go do a deeper dive into issues, risk management, crisis communications, and then I had some slides in the conclusion. What you can't see on the sources is I did not source all of the comments throughout the notes, but ideas and concepts were taken from the three textbooks as well as the Lukaszewski printout that we were provided. So next slide. So reputation is a collective representation of an organization, and sorry, that's apostrophe S, past performance to deliver future value. What the text said is the foundation of reputation is economic performance, social responsiveness, ability to deliver to stakeholders. And I would add, we must also think about integrity, honesty, compassion, towards our various stakeholders, and always act with integrity, transparency, and honesty. Lisa Lyons suggests that images owned by the corporation that could be created through marketing, advertising, and public relations, but reputation is owned by the public, meaning that we can create our own image, but it's the public, it's our words and our deeds that the public weighs our value and our reputation. And any time that we do not act in the best of our image does damage our reputation. I thought it was interesting that Burson Marsteller in the reading talked about image restoration, that it takes about 3 years to recover from a reputation-damaging crisis. But I would suggest that the impact on the collective memory for your key stakeholders could last for much longer than that, leaving that little question mark in the back of your mind about the quality and integrity of your company. Next slide. So I'm glad that Shane opened up the call with just what are the issues floating out there. The news has been very busy in the issues front, and over the past couple weeks, we've had the data breaches, data misuse. We had the accident with Uber. We have treated customers and their pets poorly, violating long-established rules and guidelines with the NCAA, and Crackpot, and being blamed for the killing of one of TV's current most beloved characters. So when we look at issues and risk management, we're talking about, you know, the proactive, systematic approach to predicting what the problems or issues might be, anticipating threats. The real issue here is the opportunities to minimize surprises. Management doesn't like surprises. And think about how you're going to resolve the issues and even prevent the crisis from happening to begin with. So Philip Gaunt and Jeff Ohlenberger suggest it's the opportunity to identify the issues and influence decision before they actually become crisis. But in the case of communication people, we play a critical role as long as we have a seat at the table in all the key areas of the business. So if you're a multi-pronged business like the company that I work for, you know, there's a lot of different divisions you need to be engaged with so that you can identify maybe some hot spot or some trouble spots that you need to address. And the crisis planning, when you look at the crisis communication, what I mean by real-world example, it's your issues risk management program come to life. So it's actually something that triggers an issue. It's reactive by nature. Tim Combs in the reading stressed issues management is a thought process. And why it is so critical, because there's greater shareholder and consumer advocacy out there, the internet-based media and technology, particularly social media, so much is broken through Twitter and Facebook and other social media. And there is a legal liability of negligence for not planning for an issue, which is becoming certainly a larger part of litigation. Next slide. So when we look at issues, we look at what is familiarity breed confidence, and that just suggests that the more you know about your business and the more you know about the issues or the things that might impact your business, you become much more confident because you've looked at how the business is run, how that particular practice may be run, and so you've already kind of done a deep dive in the how. So when you're looking at the issues, you know why something might occur, and you'll be able to address those. So we talked about no surprises. There's some of the questions kind of discuss the container and counteract as opposed to not reacting and just responding. The great thing about the issues and risk management is to have a playbook. So it's that brainstorming. It's that what keeps you up at night. So you might come away with, you know, 5 or 10 different things, but you really need to then prioritize what has the greatest likelihood of happening or causing the greatest damage to reputation. So then you would kind of prioritize that. So create a playbook for each one of the issues and continue and prioritize and continue down the list. Now, you want to minimize the impact to reputation, so you're really, again, building your playbook and your task list and those types of things. Combs had suggested that there's 3 levels to a crisis. It's the pre-crisis, the crisis, and the post-crisis. And Kathleen Ferns suggests a little bit more expanded. It's about the detection, which can be done in the pre-planning, the prevention and preparedness can be done with some of, and detection can also be done with some of the social monitoring that was talked about earlier or environmental monitoring. Then how are you going to contain and manage? How are you going to recover? And what are you going to do to learn from what has happened? So we talk about, next slide. So we talk about getting started. So we identify the team. I just mentioned scanning the environment. It's really critical to set up an information center, whether that be in some cases, depending on who's on the issues team, whether that's a virtual information center or there's a physical space to go to. It's critically important that you have all the tools you need to be effective communicators, whether that be you know, different audiovisual equipment. You need people who understand social media and can turn around tweets pretty quickly. And again, the brainstorming session, what is the worst thing that can happen? So the what keeps you up at night, assign individual groups to explore those issues, and then also, again, prioritize those issues. The plan needs management buy-in. You need to keep in mind the impacted publics, and that, as we learned from some of the questions, should have the employees front and center and then continue down the line. The takeaway here is, why is it important to prepare? Because things happen to good companies and good people, and the reverse is true. Bad things happen to bad companies and bad people. But the more that you're prepared for issues to happen, the better off and the quicker you might be able to return to a state of normalcy. And we'll talk a little bit about that at the end. Next slide. And I think one thing that we talk about is the evaluation. I don't think, and I'm as guilty as a lot of other people, that at the end of the issue or the crisis, it is so important to go back and see what went right, what went wrong, how are you going to improve going forward? Did you have all the right people in the room? Did you ask all the right questions? Because that just helps improve your issues and crisis management going forward. I always take the plan that we have for a particular issue and scribble all over the paper, throw in emails that might be relevant. So when I come back to that evaluation, that postmortem, if you will, I can update the process slide or the plan design for the next go around. Next slide. So that's kind of the preparation. And again, we really talked about crisis communication. So we did all of that pre-work, and we've done all of that research. But as they say, the best laid plans of mice and men. And in other words, stuff happens. So in the reading, there was a lot of discussion about the three types of crises. I have one listed here, which is something that happens immediately, just kind of pops up. Other ones are kind of those emerging, smoldering. I like the word brewing, that you have them in the back of your mind. You hope it doesn't pop up, but all of a sudden one day you come into work and your whole day is blown. And then the ones that just last over long periods of time, those ones that really do an enormous amount of reputational damage. And the biggest issue around I think it was Weber Shandwick with KRC, talked about the three main factors that account for most issues. And the topics were really broad, or the categories were really broad, but these no-no level. So financial irregularities. So is it a department that's doing something wrong? Is it a company that's doing something wrong? Was there unethical behavior? Again, that could be at the highest levels or at the lowest levels. And was there executive misconduct? Again, these no-no levels. And crisis management in the digital age, the timeline is just accelerated. Because you can tweet, you can post something on Facebook, you can get on social media so quickly with your story that the company or the organization that's being quote-unquote attacked doesn't have the opportunity to respond. And I think the interesting quote that was in the text was a CNN vice president commented on why time is of the essence. And you know, with the digital age, this is no more true today than it was, no more true today than in other days past. If you do not respond quickly to what has happened, you create a vacuum. And I'm not a science person, but you know what happens with a vacuum. It gets filled in by other things, because a vacuum doesn't like to be empty space. So when you're dealing with an issue, you can go from, you know, they talk about peer advocacy, which is attacking the accuser. You can go from, if you can change the slide. You can go from peer accommodation. We hear some of the things, the common mistakes that people make. And some of these are excuses. You know, we hesitate while we're hesitating because we might not know how to respond, what do people perceive? They think we're confused. They think we're callous, unprepared, or worse, incompetent, probably callous would be worse. We're obfuscating, we're retaliating, we're pontificating. Nothing is worse than when people are trying to address away an issue. We're confrontational, and then there is the chance of litigation, which you don't want to go through. And then Luke Kaczewski, if you haven't read that guide that he developed, it's just such a great condensed version of how to do a plan and some of the issues that come up. But there's, you know, testosterosis, you know, we're all powerful. That gets into the arrogance. You want to blame somebody. I think it was Allison mentioned earlier that we're victims too. People don't necessarily buy that. But when you're looking at these, all of these types of things, you need to take a look at the external factors and the internal factors and act accordingly and try to be your best self. And the common mistakes or the excuses or places to place blame doesn't necessarily project our best self. Next slide. So when we implement the response process, I think Warren Buffett had it right. Get it right, get it fast, get it out, get it over. Because it really does drag on the company, on the management team who's been asked to be engaged, and it really takes the PR team, particularly if there's not a dedicated group of people that work on issues and they might have other jobs, it takes them away from the more proactive, positive part of the business. And people like to work on that stuff more so than issues. Again, you want to be candid. You want to be transparent. You want to be honest. One thing that got cut off in restructuring the slide is the end goal is really being given the permission, if you will, to move on. And here's some quick checklist from the effective public relations tech. So get out the plan, get it started, make sure top management's involved, get your spokespeople ready, make sure they're not on vacation, and if they are, make sure you've got their backups and their backups are ready to go. Provide 24-hour a day coverage, and again, regroup at the end. Some of these ones on the don't are basic media training type tools. Don't speculate. Don't minimize a problem. Critical, don't let the story dribble out. I think we're finding today in a lot of the crises is that stories are getting out piece by piece, and they just get worse and worse because it makes the companies appear that they're not being transparent. Don't say no comment. At least have something to say. Play favorites with the media. Get the information out to everybody. And a wrap-up kind of slide, if you will, Shane, is the way I look at it is we have one word, which is anticipation. Have you done your brainstorming? Have you surveyed the environment? Have you gotten the right people involved? Then for preparation, have you developed a series of strong plans, template plans? Do you have the group in place? Do you have the tools in place? And the final word, and I think I've stressed this throughout, is, and I think throughout the text they've stressed this, is going back and learning and relearning from your past experiences. And I always think that if these books were written today, we would take into account mindfulness and the importance of staying calm and focused and check in with your colleagues and your cohorts to be sure that everybody's okay. And that's what I mean by take one deep breath.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Shannon, insight, please.
Very thorough. Good notes. Luka Zuski, is that how you say his name? Luka Zowski is for over 20, 30 years, I used to work in defense, and he was the go-to expert on crisis communication. So
yeah, if you ever get a chance to hear him present, he's amazing.
Yeah, what he says goes, and that was well done. Couple of things I would add just to kind of for any of you, and you may agree or disagree with this, but in the few experiences I've had, like one of them was our office in Houston was hit by a hurricane. Well, what we didn't anticipate when it got hit and we had to communicate with our clients and with our attorneys is the servers went down. We had no technology. So one of the things I would throw in there with any of you in any kind of crisis communication plan is what happens if your computers go out, A, but also B, any kind of crisis communication plan, make sure that your IT folks are a part of that committee or planning. So there's a plan B if the servers or the IT goes down. The only other thing I'd add as far as spokespeople go, a lot of people want to hear from your leader, your CEO. That's who they ideally want as far as the public face talking. But not every case is the CEO the best person to be delivering the messages. So you, prior to any crisis, make sure that if you are using your CEO, that he's well-trained, media-trained, he or she. And if not using him, always have a plan B or, whoever your other spokesperson is. Make sure you always have, just in case they're out of pocket, you have plan B in place.
Yeah. I would definitely agree with that too, Shannon. I had the, fortunate misfortune to be in that twice where our servers went down. And one time it was not the servers, it was something that was supporting the servers and everything crashed and we couldn't access any of our computers. And this was all spaced out within about 3 months of both situations. And we learned quite a bit from the first time. I ended up having to put out all my press releases and my communication with the media through my phone. And one of the big things that we learned was having a lot of our call list. If you have like a go-to bag or something that you can keep in your office that has kind of a rundown sheet of everybody's cell phone numbers, everybody from all your VPs or everybody else that you work with. The other thing I found was keeping some extra cell phone charging packs or portable battery packs. Those really help because as soon as you set up any kind of a crisis type communication room, a situation room, those become a hot commodity and everybody seems to turn to you and your colleagues for cell phone access. So, just something I'd like to definitely throw out there. So, moving on, our next thing we're going to do is we're going to have a panel presentation. This is from Mike Vanist. He's going to be presenting on a very recent or very current situation.
A little bit of both. I'm on. There we go. How are you guys?
Good.
How is everybody tonight? Good?
Good.
Awesome.
I'll drive once again. Just tell me when you want me to go to the next slide.
Actually, I can do it if you don't mind.
Oh, go right ahead.
Yeah, on my end here, looks like we can do it. Okay, so basically I'm going to go through our public relations and marketing plan that we just launched here this month, and it's carrying on through the month of September. And to give you a little background here, my company is a commercial real estate company in downtown Columbus, Ohio. We were founded in 1966. We are a development company. We own and manage and lease out all of the office space in our buildings. We do not sell. We do not turn for a profit. We make our money basically off of leasing office space. And we have multiple high-rises in four different cities throughout Ohio and Pennsylvania, Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. It is family owned. It was started by E.V. Bischoff in 1966, and it is now owned and managed by his son, David Bischoff. We maintain a full staff to service needs of each tenant from maintenance to security. So the problem that we're having or that we've had here over the last couple of years is our downtown vacancy rate in all of our cities is averaging about 50%, and that needs to be lowered in 2018. The vacancy rate in all of these cities, the average is right around the 25 to 30%, so we need to be closer to that. So the situation analysis standpoint, again, to go back, we've managed and renovated historic Cleveland, Pittsburgh for more than 50 years. As stated earlier, we do have properties in those three cities, and each property, again, is leased and managed by the company. For much of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, these buildings maintained an 85% occupancy rate, 15% vacancy rate. And since 2000, that occupancy rate has decreased substantially and now stands at 53% exactly against a 47% occupancy rate, a dramatic shift in the last 15 years. So to address this, the research that I conducted were four different types, formal and secondary, mainly formal and secondary with one informal and primary. We used a range of databases in commercial real estate world. CoStar is the end all be all for these databases. We've also done a little bit of fact finding and internet research. We used information from CB Richard Ellis, Colliers, and JLL. They're sort of the, if CoStar is the number, then CBRE, Colliers, and JLL's market reports are probably 2A and 2B, 2C. We studied competitor listings on the websites. We conducted an online survey to current tenants and tenants of our competitor buildings. Did a little fact-finding there, and then used the Columbus Public Library for some national business databases and some internet research. The asked were, what are the contributing factors to the decrease in the vacancy rate in E.V. Bischoff Company's building? What are competitor buildings doing to keep their vacancy rates low? How can E.V. Bischoff Company improve their office spaces to attract more tenants? And what are the demographics of those who lease offices in downtown areas? So the research results, the contributing factors to E.V. Bischoff Company's tenancy decrease was the downsizing of large companies such as PNC Bank and U.S. Bank. These companies used E.V. Bischoff Company's buildings as back office space and project space for 15 years. And what they did was they moved out to the suburbs. Parking became an issue for a lot of these companies. So they headed out to where they could build their own campuses out in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Columbus and Cincinnati. E.V. Bischoff Company lost many tenants due to that. Keeping their office by not keeping their office space up to date and not keeping up on the maintenance issues. And that led to a negative reputation amongst our clients. So what were the competitor buildings doing to keep their vacancy rates low? Well, continually updating their products by offering new amenities included with their office leases, such as projection screens, audio, video, free Wi-Fi, a modern interior design, and flexible leasing terms. How can E.V. Bischoff Company improve their office spaces? That research was found to offering updates throughout their buildings, servicing their elevators, creating options for parking, and adding new amenities such as the audio video equipment, projection screens, fitness rooms, updated common areas, and flat screen TVs. And finally, what are the demographics of those who lease offices in the Columbus, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Cleveland downtown areas? Well, the majority of these employees are lawyers, lobbyists, architects, marketing pros, and financial professionals. The largest age group of downtown employees is found to be between 25 and 40-year-old, which made up 60% of the employee population. Marketing and tech startups for the fastest growing businesses in the downtown central business districts of Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. So the goal was to establish E.V. Bischoff Company as the choice for downtown office space leasing. Our measurable objectives were to increase web traffic to our website from roughly 1,000 monthly visitors to over 2,000 visitors by June 30th, 2018. We hope to increase our social media following on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook to 1,000 connections by September of this year. Lease one of our new Presto fully furnished office spaces in each city by August 31st, 2018. Lease an additional 10,000 square feet of new office space in each city by September 30th. And then, of course, by September 30th, increase the awareness of E.V. Bischoff Company as the choice company for modern, collaborative, and flexible office space amongst downtown architects, engineers, attorneys, lobbyists, and tech startups by 50%. Increase awareness of E.V. Bischoff Company's activities amongst downtown residents by 50% by August 31st. And then increase awareness of our company's preserving of historical downtown office buildings among key historical society, nonprofit, state legislators by 50% by August 31st of this year. Our tactics, as you can see here, and I'm going to probably bring up my iPad here so I can read it a little bit clearer. Some of the tactics we're going to use, we're going to produce 5 videos for social media, ranging everywhere from an introduction of the company to an introduction of historic buildings and key points about the building, a guided video tour, interviews with the architects and engineers on the challenges to maintain these buildings, a testimonial from current tenants on why they love our offices, and then issues facing startups and architects, engineers when selecting new office space. The audience we're pretty much going to go after here on this campaign will be engineers, millennial students, millennial startup companies, lawyers, lobbyists, architectural students at local colleges, small business owners, and key state local government context. Some more of the tactics that we're going to run are open houses of our buildings and our new Presto office suites. And each one of these tactics that I have listed here play up against some of the objectives that I listed earlier. And I'm not going to bore you guys here this evening. You guys can go back and read the notes there and then give me some feedback if you'd like. And I'll continue on here. Some press releases and video news releases on the history behind the buildings and the cost to maintain. Posting 5 blog posts once a week, beginning this past February, that was actually moved up to March. We'll engage with the press on social media. And then engage on social media with civic and nonprofit organizations who devote time to the history of. Pitch stories on downtown buildings to Ohio, the Ohio History Connection, the Downtown Pittsburgh History Connection or History Alliance, and other various historical societies amongst Cleveland, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati. In addition, we're going to improve all photos to optimize our website, and then upgrade all of our Presto fully furnished office suites with a 65-inch plasma TV, projection screens, audio, video equipment, modern furniture, modern office desks, conference tables, surround sound, Bluetooth, music system, and distribute brochures and flyers to each of our satellite offices for distribution. And then finally, distribute promo items for all of our leasing agents to use throughout each city. And then finally, we will evaluate this program by comparing our objectives to our results. And that's it.
Okay. I know I have a few things. Thank you very much, Mike. That's great. Shannon, did you have some insight you'd like to share?
First of all, I mean, it was very thorough. One of the things I'd like to ask, Shane, I'm going to ask you to share your insight first, but I'd like to know if you've actually been if this is an actual thing happening, if you've got any results yet. I'm curious.
To me, it's a little too early to tell on that because we're only about 3 weeks into this. We have seen an uptick on our website. The bulk of all of this stuff is really going to come out next or here in April with the video news releases, the new videos. I've kind of spent the entire month developing all of our videos that we're going to be using for social media and for distribution out to the local historical societies, as well as our potential tenants and our media around town.
Yeah, I know we're tight on time, so Shane, go ahead and say what you're going to say, and then maybe I can add to it.
Okay. Just a couple things. I guess the placement of some of the tactics before even listing the target audience as well as the strategies why you're targeting those particular audience groups that you identified, to me, I felt was definitely missing because it was very tactic heavy. Like it looks like you're putting a lot of stuff in there. And I understand you have a lot of objectives lined up as well. But having a plan as far as like why are you investing so much onto each of those different ones, maybe seeing that divide it out a little bit more in your plan. And then also when it comes to your evaluation side too, having it part of that, sometimes it's really good to put in what is your process for reporting back to your owners and so on. So the different results as you're going along, if something is not going according to plan, what's your approach for addressing it? Or because it looked like you had a lot of stuff that was all built up that was very dependent on other things happening as well.
Okay,
does that make sense? Okay, yeah, absolutely, it does.
And then, Mike, I was going to add the research. You did. I liked your research section. It looked like you had done some good research and identified, you know, some of the factors that are making this happen. And by the way, that's very common situation with this office space. It's happening in Dallas, happening in Fort Worth. Some of the research I would have also included, and I'm not positive if you did this or not, is to identify, you know, interviews on the people that have left and why they left, and go walk some office spaces in the burbs and where these people are moving to. The objectives, there was a couple of the objectives. I thought that you had a lot of objectives. You did not, I think, for a readiness review presentation or something, I would probably scale that back a little bit. And some of your objectives, to measure them effectively, you would have had to do a very intense, expensive survey to establish a baseline to tell me that you now have 50% more of your senators or government leaders or whatever on board, that kind of thing. Do you know what I'm saying? It seemed like some of the objectives were going to be based on surveys, but there was no, you know, you really had no tangible way of showing me where you were starting from to show me that you got 50% more increase in buy-in.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Joan, Mike, and Shannon. Again, next week, we're going to be going over leading the PR function. I'll be your facilitator once again. And we'll also have Karen Kolb. And Mike, you're going to be providing some of our questions and notes from Jessamy Brown. Quick shout out to Jessamy. Congratulations. I guess the clock is now ticking. So congrats and good luck. And then we're going to be getting a case study from Casey Escobar. So again, please keep in mind, it's going to be 8 o'clock Eastern Standard next Tuesday. And if I could get a shout out to everybody that helped out, from Mike and Allison and Maria, thank you so much for helping out. And a big round of applause for Shannon. Thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you for letting me participate. This was a lot of fun. Good luck to everyone.
Thank you. And remember, please continue to study, but study at your own pace, and just focus on the process. All right? So thank you once again. We're a couple minutes shy, so if anybody has any questions, I'm going to leave this running. If you have any questions for me, I'll stay on. Jessamy brought up a good point. Question in the chat about problem statements. Does it come right after a situation analysis or before? That is a good point, because I know some people do it differently. I find that a situation analysis needs to always come before the problem statement, because the situation analysis is what's going to feed the problem statement. So, but I know some other people tend to want it the other way, where I've seen it both ways, is what I'm saying. But my preference, and what I've come to understand from the study guide and the process, is that you're doing a situation analysis. Situation analysis kind of concludes with helping to identify the problem statement, and then the problem statement is what builds, supports your goal. Right.
I would agree.
Thank
with
you,
that.
Kelly. And also, I noticed Cindy Fuller made a good point about the EOC and the JIC. When you have immediate crisis, the FEMA and CDC and really it started with firefighters, but there is already an incident command model, a whole structure that's been in place that even the media is getting used to using. And a lot of times, those will be your go-to crisis communication plans. They already have those established. Plus, there are free classes that look up your state's emergency management agency representative. Check for the next public information officer classes. Yes, the ICS training. There is plenty of great resources. And it's another really great resource to have under your belt. Yep, they do have some free the free certificate class that you can take, and then they have an in-person class that you have to do the online class first before you can do the in-person one. Patrick asked a question about case presentation. That's exactly like what Mike just did. So providing your case study or what you're bringing to your readiness review. And you can speak offline. Let's see. Well, you still have plenty of time. I would suggest contact Michael. He is available. Shoot him an email. And you can CC me as well. I'd be happy to chime in if that helps. And is that the same as case problem presentation? I guess I'm not sure of the question. Someone elaborate on the difference between outcome and output.
Sorry, but my typing's not working here. The one of the chatters told me to make sure the objectives I'm putting are outcome objectives, not output objectives. Yes. I was hoping that someone could just quickly,
quickly, your
just
output
to clarify for me real quick here.
Yep, your output is the content that you're going to be generating that you're putting out. So say your output might be, I'm going to put out 5 blog posts. That's an output objective. Whereas an outcome objective is, we received 500 new subscribers per blog post. That would be an outcome.
Got it. Makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, and outputs are the result from the tactic, whereas outcome is usually more derived from the strategy that you're putting forward. Okay, we are now past 9 o'clock. I am going to be closing up the session. Thank you very much, everybody. Again, if you have any questions, you can always also find me online. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter. And reach out to Michael. He should be back in a couple weeks. But I'll see everybody next Tuesday at 8 o'clock. See you then. Night, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.